Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And a very good evening to you. Monday, July the 25th. You're listening to Manx Radio. Let's continue our election coverage now. This evening, we speak to a sitting member, a member since September 2011, in a constituency where, for a bit longer at least, voters can approach up to three members if they have a problem. Seeking re-election for a further five-year term is the Rushen MHK Lawrence Skelly. Good evening, Mr. Skelly.
That's the bye, James.
The constituency of Rushen, from where I'm standing, has always been a bit of a political hotbed. I know the turnout at the last election, just under 59%. The land flowing with milk and, well, money in some cases. I mean, what is stirring the loins of the good people of Rushen right now?
Well, first of all, you just highlighted there that we're going with the boundary changes. We're going to go from three members to two members. And I know all three of us, Stu and Phil and I, we all agreed with the voter sort of equalisation. However, we disagreed with the reduction because I think we all felt the same, that the bigger the constituency, the bigger the politics. And we had a great cross-section, I think, of people. And now as we contemplate going into this election right now, for me and I think for Duan, it's about the losing the good people of Arbury, are good people and we've had a good relationship with, and we're sorry to see that go. So now we have to concentrate on Port Eyre and Port St Mary and obviously the rare parish of Rushen. And there's a host of different issues. We attend various meetings, traders meetings, and obviously you've got your constituent meetings and surgeries and so forth. And there's a host of issues. But one which we've been working on for some time, we're really delighted we've been leading the way, and that is legislation about the derelict property issue. Particularly poignant, I think, for us because we have such a number of them in Port Erin in particular, but certainly Port St Mary too. But it is an island-wide issue, and it's something that we've been working on for some time, and we're delighted, I believe, Royal Assent is now about to happen, which means that it will give some authority to actually deal with this issue.
Well, it's a desirable area. As you mentioned, there's a lot of farming, some expensive housing, fine coastline. Is there much, I don't know, Manx stubbornness in evidence in the constituency, more than most, do you think? Because typically, Rushen turns up surprise votes periodically.
Yes, I suppose historically, if you look at that, there have been changes over the years. And yes, you obviously would want to say they've always returned good quality members. You mentioned Manx stubbornness, this is getting into very close to the crab syndrome. And I think we all do this very well, don't we? That we play to our anxieties. And it's something in particular I want to really turn around because I think we need to appeal to our aspirations. Because quite frankly, I think we've got a lot more to shout about than to decry trying to put things down all the time.
Just on your priorities, I noticed constituency-wise, you've re-elected one of your priorities, talking of crabs, would be to relaunch the Queenie Festival. Why did it stop anyway?
Yes.
Your watch and Phil Gorn's watch and Jim Watterson's watch.
It was, yes, yeah. And it was a great event and I think it built up great momentum. It was a wonderful community feel to it and obviously very historically bound in Port St Mary. So Phil, June and I did step in to actually save it, and sadly it fell foul actually of event organiser this year who pulled out very, very late without being able to do anything about it this year. We have had a preliminary meeting with their commissioners, the Wildlife Trust and other interested parties, and I feel reasonably confident we will be able to relaunch it again next year, which means we'll be effectively trying to save it for the second time round.
That was Port St Mary. How much in Port Eyre and how much of a blow has been the loss of the Port Eyre Police Station?
I think there's been a concern, hasn't there, with regards to security, especially that spate of burglaries we had a little while back, and people are concerned about that. But there's been, I think, more than anything else, that sort of highlighted, I think, the lack of security awareness we had on the Isle of Man, not just in our area, but yes, there has been a loss of the station in terms of a police station. But you may have heard the news recently there that was just recently announced by June and Home Affairs. And that is the use of that facility for training, which means you will actually see bobbies around Port Erin again and the area.
Well, let's turn to the bigger picture now, because we know serious challenges lie ahead. How can you promise your constituents that unless there is a change in the makeup of Tynwald, that you or anyone for that matter can be effective at anything?
Well, when you say a change, I mean, there has been, you know, we just brought forward legislation. You know, we just talked about derelict properties. In many people's eyes, that'd be small change. But there's a whole host of different areas where you can actually make change. We've just agreed some new legislation that has actually helped with regards to our business community, and that is for the alternative banking regime and the crowdfunding that was also introduced. And that's now going to be a major boost for our island in terms of business opportunities there. And that's where change in legislation, and that's what we do politically. We make the law, change the law and amend the law. In this particular case, this is about actually betterment for business.
Well, you clearly want to continue the work you've started. What exactly is that work? Can you specify?
Well, I think it's a continuation of all the things that we do. And that's what you obviously set your manifesto forward, which I'm just trying to finalise mine as we speak. So you have obviously constituency issues, which we've touched on a little bit there. But one of the big areas that I'd like to focus in on, and that is actually to create a National Marine Centre where we celebrate this newly acquired accreditation from UNESCO, so we can promote the conservation, development and sustainability and education.
Is that
of
a
our
vote
marine
winner?
Life. Is that a vote winner? This is about actually having an attraction and a viable business proposition in our constituency. And I think it would be an international attraction, not just a national attraction. And it's something that wasn't realised previously. And I think this is where government needs to consider where we can actually step in. A lot of interest, a lot of momentum for that. And I think that's something that we do need to look at.
We've all heard the words, we've all heard the platitudes. We need a diversified yet growing economy to support welfare, generally health, education. How do you do that? How have you helped in that regard over the last 5 years?
Well, you touched on regeneration, and I guess our area, Port Erin and Port St Mary, are last areas to sort of see
that. That needs it more than most, doesn't it?
Well, I think, you know, they'd all argue around the island it needs it, and we've seen here benefit, I think, in Douglas, we've seen benefit in Ramsey, starting to in Castletown. We're now starting to realise that in Port Erin and Port St Mary. And it's this simple stuff, really. It's, in Port St Mary, we've had some paving, small scale, but, you know, first impressions are lasting impressions. And if you're trying to impress visitors or businesses, you know, that works quite well. And now we're trying to realise the joint travel terminus there in Port Erin, where we'll see the buses and the trains in the same destination, tourist information in one particular location. So it's small scale, but this will be a benefit, I believe, you know, to the retail areas that we do represent.
Well, it is small scale with a look to the bigger picture, but how can local businesses flourish to offer income, provide income for owners, for employees, for government, for suppliers? We all hear all these words, but in terms of putting actually into action.
Well, I think you've got to look at the movement. One of the greatest things to come out of regeneration was actually the birth of these trader associations. They weren't around until the regeneration actually hit the headlines, and that's what's actually happened. We have monthly meetings with these groups, and in particular, we see, you know, Port St Mary quite not so frequent, but Port Erin have traders groups, and they have volunteers that actually meet visitors off the train, and that's actually been a real boost. And you've only got to look actually at the moment. If you look in both those ports, you'll actually struggle to find retail space available. And retail space means local spend, and that's really important.
Local spend, then. What about the bigger picture of long-term planning to ensure those in need of care receive the high standard of care? Where's that money going to come from?
Well, you're getting into how do we protect the vulnerable, I guess, and that's the key theme was grow the economy, protect the vulnerable, rebalance the budget. And in terms of protecting the vulnerable, I think you know, that's a very general term. It goes beyond that, and it's something I think there is still a body of work to be done about how do we help and care and also enable the vulnerable.
But we should know by now. We've talked about it for long enough.
Yeah, it sounds like that, but then you then have to define exactly who are the vulnerable, and they can be all kinds of people. In some cases, like where we are with take unemployment, for example, there are some really difficult cases from serious issues people have that they haven't been able to gain employment, and we have to work with those people to see what we can do to try and get them back into gainful employment, that they are contributing and they feel, you know, self-worth in themselves. Because if you've been out of employment for a long time, it is difficult to get back into it, and they too are vulnerable, as well as people with health issues, mental issues, and so forth. And therefore, that vulnerable term is very ambiguous, and you need to drill down in each area of that.
Lots of superlatives, naturally, but how exactly can we replace this 40% of income that has been lost?
Well, I think, you know, you get now into rebalancing the budget.
And they're all connected, let's face it.
Well, they are all connected, yes. And rebalancing the budget, we've hit that point with regards to the revenue budget. But I think it highlights what I've always said. You know, we had three equal priorities there. And the number one issue for me, undoubtedly, is about growing the economy. Why? Because it's going to be much more difficult to continue to rebalance that budget and actually protect the vulnerable, as we just talked about. So the growing the economy is where I believe the real priority needs to be in the drive for the future. And you must think that we've got a real uncertain future now, especially with what's happened with Brexit. That's only going to compound this much further, and we'll see what could be an extended period of uncertainty, which is not good for business, and that's where we really do need to put our thinking caps on.
So is that where your main qualities come from, actually? The bigger picture, welfare, health and education will almost take care of themselves if we can grow the economy.
They can, although they must, the word I would always use is innovate. And we must always innovate with regards to the service that we provide, the digital strategy, for example, you know, which actually is not just about growing business. This is actually about making government more efficient. Just today, I was met with a constituent who said, and talked to an elderly constituent, and talked about, you know, 64 times he's flown to Liverpool for various different services, medical services. But could you do that through telemedicine now? Yes, they could do that. You won't have to have that grueling trip all day. And then you think of also that will be improved, better patient outcomes and also help economically as well.
Well, you are the Economic Development Minister. Are there more unwelcome charges to come, necessary perhaps to help balance the revenue budget, but are there more around the corner?
No, you would hope not. And but you can never say never, I suppose, at the end of the day. And, you know, there have been a host of unwelcome ones. I'd say they're necessary in order to rebalance the budget. And that's the difficulty, of course. I think, you know, and this administration has had a tough time, no doubt about it. These, you know, probably the most difficult in the last three decades. You know, what we've had to do is really constrain, pull our belt in and actually introduce charges just to ensure that we reach that rebalancing.
The Economic Development Fund, £50 million yet after the great success of Arles Expo a couple of months ago, it seems to have all gone quiet. I mean, I know these things don't happen overnight, but what are we seeing that is actually tangible?
Well, I'm glad you picked up on the Isle Expo, because that gets back to what I was saying earlier about the feel-good factor and the buzz that that created, the confidence that that really shown, I think, not to so many people, 1,000 people in one event talking about new emerging businesses, technologies. There were actually deals done on that particular day. Even the Pitch It programme, which is a little bit like your Dragon's Den, where we had local students actually getting support for their business ideas, as well as, you know, mainstream business as well. So what has happened? Well, the Enterprise Development Scheme has been approved. Spark Impact, the company that we've outsourced this to, and that was really important, we depoliticize that and take it out of the civil service with the appropriate governance. They're now in place with regards to the appropriate authorities that they had to get in the UK and the Isle of Man, and ready to do business. There's 80-something leads that they're working on, and there's been businesses here on the Isle of Man already. I've had estate agents tell me they're looking at office space. We're going to see startups. We're going to see employment. We're going to see investment as a result of that. And don't forget, this £50 million is only about a part investment by government. In other words, up to 20, 25%, 75 to 80% is going to have to come from private enterprise to actually invest in these businesses.
I think Where You Can is the website. What happened to Freedom to Flourish? Because I mean, that all seems to have gone quiet. Is there a joined-up approach to this?
Well, Freedom to Flourish is Where You Can is really...
We spent a fortune on that.
And there were...
Slogan?
Might be money spent on it, but there was an awful lot of goodwill actually expanded on that. And spoke to Professor Hugh Davison, whose brainchild this was, give all his free time, I think we shared with him Where You Can and what we're trying to do now. And that's really an extension of that. And what we're trying to do here is basically go back to this word innovation. Government's role is to try and create the right economic ecosystem for businesses to flourish and to be where they can. And that's what we're trying to create here on the Isle of Man. We don't necessarily know what is the next big thing because we've been through that. You know, it was finance 30 years ago. It was e-gaming 10, 15 years ago. You know, today, what is it? You know, it could be any host of number of things. You know, the one that's sort of got a lot of publicity is the digital currency, you know, and that's got off to a little bit of negativity in some areas. However, that's now morphed into what is known as fintech. That's financial technology, blockchain technology. So you can got all the brains that we've got in the finance industry working with the innovation and creation in the high tech industry coming together. And that's an industry that's, what, less than 2 years old, got 40-something people already employed in it, and nobody knows anything about it.
Well, they do now. They're starting to. I mean, you mentioned Brexit there. To tell me, after Brexit, should we as an island have more independence from the UK?
I think what we've got to do is keep all our options open, and that's very, very clear.
So is that a possibly?
Always, yes. And it's something we've always got to bear in mind, you know, what are our options? The Crown dependency, I think is reasonable to argue, has served us well. There's no doubt about it. But we've got to maintain political autonomy. I think that's the key element here. In other words, what we do with regards to, you know, governing ourselves, we need to ensure that going forward. So with Brexit, you've had Chief Minister just last week at the British Irish Council to understand what our near neighbours' reaction to this, and quite clear, you know, what actually happened with that particular result. There was no plan at all. So therefore, you know, we're in a reactive mode as a result of that. But however, what I will tell, and it's very important to recognise this, we have done two interim reports with regards to our economic resilience as a result of what's just happened. And there are certainly going to be areas that will be affected. However, there are other areas that we believe that we can expand and create new opportunities.
You mentioned the Chief Minister there. Politically, you'd like to be the next Chief Minister, wouldn't you?
Oh, got the back to that. You tried it last time, and the same. The answer is pretty plain and simple, James. All I'm focused on is two things. Number one, to finish the job I'm already here to do, and that is the Economic Development Minister, to keep the economy growing. And number two, to get re-elected.
So what is your political ambition after that?
My political ambition is only till September the 22nd to see if I can actually get re-elected. And if we get re-elected, and see who does get re-elected, and then they will decide who will be the next Chief Minister.
But there is this going round, and it's been mentioned to me by a number of MHKs as well, that should you be successful, you've been talking to sounding people out about roles in the next cabinet. I mean, is there any truth in that? Is that politics?
No, first and foremost, there is absolutely no truth in that. And is that politics? Sadly, if people are telling you that, is the dirty side of politics, which I think is appalling, to be quite frank.
But would you... You're an ambitious man. I mean, you've shown that in this term. I know you criticised the health minister at the day he went. You obviously took a ministerial position on fairly early on. Then you were promoted to economic development minister. So presumably you wouldn't hesitate in moving up as far as you can.
Well, all I have actually done is done the jobs that I've been asked to do. You didn't mention there I worked in DCCL. I was also chairman of planning. I was also chairman of the Arts Council. So I've done all these jobs that I've been asked to do, and that's what I will continue to do. At this moment in time, the only question that's outstanding is, do the people, the good people of Russian, want me to be back here as an MHK? And that's the only outstanding question.
You're a proud Manxman. What's the legacy from the Year of Culture?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that. The legacy is actually the promotion of the creative industries. And again, that I would point to the word of innovation. And creative industries crosses so many different industries. And many, you talk about history, heritage, tech. These are all merged, and they can actually all be part of the creative industries. Tomorrow, actually, we've got the people coming over to talk about the Celtic Media Festival that we've managed to bring to the Isle of Man for next year. This is 500 delegates from all our Celtic neighbours, actually including the UK. It's really, really important that they're here. BBC will have a big presence, and this is a really prestigious organisation, and they promote the creative industries, and that's something that we do need to look at to see how we can actually capitalise much further.
Talk about the legacy there. I know one of the issues at the moment is the Villa Gaiety corporatisation, and staff have been told next to nothing, and I know you admitted yourself about 10, 11 days ago now that it could have been managed better. There was a short list of three potential operators, one of which would have taken over the running this autumn. Yet the whole process, the whole tender process has started again now. Why?
Well, it hasn't started again. All we have done is now we've actually, started the actual official tender process. People had actually jumped the gun because of the information that was actually put in the public domain a little bit too early.
And the tender documents I saw, the decision was going to be made last month.
To be quite frank, it should have been done much earlier. But having said that, though, once we discovered the position that we were in, and this was all about ensuring that we do this and do this right, because we had two other interested parties, local interested parties, that had come forward. They had to be qualified, and they both actually have decided not to to tender forward.
But if they miss the original deadline, that's tough, isn't it?
No. What we want, well, do we want local people to tender? Yes, of course we do, and that's why we did try to accommodate that. But as you said 10 days ago, what we need to be very, very careful and very wary about, and this comes back to the scope of government, if we are to enact some of these things, we need to do this in an appropriate manner. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. Same as what we've done for TT. We've gone through a fairly painful process with that, but the result was it was absolutely appropriate, and we did get the department, council ministers and Tim Wall's support to get to that particular point.
The potential advantages and disadvantages to corporatisation, of course there are, but you don't lease off the crown jewels, do you? I mean, the real reason your department's done this is because they're buying time, desperate not to make this an election issue.
No, not at all. And what you say, you don't lease off. What you don't do is you sell your strategic assets. You can continue to own them, but should government continue to operate them? That's the differential here. And this is what corporatisation is really about. So we have very much respected, I just want to reiterate this point, and I said this actually when I met with the staff a little while ago, is that we are following guidelines for TUPE. Not too long ago. This was actually a face-to-face meeting, went down to meet with the staff and hear their issues, and of course try and dispel some of the myth that was actually out there, which has been extremely unhelpful. And I highlighted then that we are going to follow 2P guidelines, which was a very important point to this.
So can you tell current staff that their current terms and conditions will be maintained, whatever happens.
And what we're saying is we will follow 2P guidelines should we get to that particular juncture. But what we have to do is understand, are we going to get to that juncture that we need to make that decision? At this moment in time, we haven't completed the tender process. Therefore, we don't know what we actually have on offer on the table in front of us.
So the uncertainty for staff continues.
It does, and that is unfortunate, and that's why we don't want to rush it. If we were to rush it, then of course then you could see how things could go horribly wrong very quickly.
Will the department be happy to continue operating it as it is now if the tender process only reaches thus far?
Yes, and I bear in mind that's exactly what you're meant to do with the scope of government report. And the scope of government report says that you are meant to test really alternative means of service delivery. And that's one of the areas that we do need to look at. And the same goes there. There was also the opportunity for a management operation as well. And that was highlighted in the meeting that we did have with the staff. So we made that very, very clear. And hopefully that dispelled all the myths. What's not helpful, of course, is to continue to regurgitate to make it sound like there is a problem.
Well, it's not helpful for the staff who've had this cloud hanging over them for several months.
It's not helpful to them to actually continually regurgitate the issue after having a face-to-face meeting to explain these points. But we have highlighted these points, I think, very clearly and very fairly.
And you feel that they've been fully briefed?
They have to date, yes. And what was happening, as I said earlier, you were rather getting ahead of yourself and making a lot of assumptions over different issues.
Well, we are out of time virtually. I just want to ask you two quick things very quickly. Do you think a public representative is suitably qualified to run a government department?
A public representative? What do you mean, a private member of the...
Of the public, yeah.
Well, they can be, and you could almost argue that an MLC fits that particular role should they be voted in externally. And I think that falls into the area, I think, I've said this before about MLCs, they can be regarded as non-executives of national importance. There is an element there where I think if you don't have constituency involvement, just you can actually put a different view over, and that can actually be very helpful.
In 10 seconds, why should the people of Russia invest their vote in you? What's in it for them?
Well, what's in it for them, hopefully, is that I've demonstrated that I am, first and foremost, accessible to the people of Russia. And secondly, you know, I've hopefully demonstrated that what I can achieve, and I hopefully give a clear vision and strong leadership.
Russian MHK Lawrence Skelly, thank you for being our guest. Good evening.
All right, thank you.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.